$40 million in profits, they only leave less than $300,000 to the municipality, which is less than 1%. So again, when we think about these mega projects, which the Biden administration will definitely promote, we always have to ask development for who does it benefit? It doesn't benefit indigenous communities, and it only benefits corporations.
Giovanni Batts, I want to thank you for being with us, President's postdoctoral fellow in the Department of Native American Studies at the University of California, Davis. His upcoming book, tentatively titled The Fourth Invasion, Decolonial History's Mega Projects and Ishilmaya Resistance in Guatemala. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Libby Rainey, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tadesena, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Ravi Karan, Hani Masood, and Adriana Contreras. Our general manager is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Marion Barnard, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, and Dennis McCormick. Stay safe, wear a mask. I'm Amy Goodman.
KBOO is excited to be a part of the Willamette Week Give Guide this year. When you support KBOO through Give Guide, not only does it support your favorite community radio station, it also gives a little back to you in return. When you donate $10 or more, you'll get full access to hundreds of local coupons in the Chinook Book app, plus a few other goodies, available while supplies last. So donate to KBOO on Give Guide today at kboo.fm/give. Thanks.
This is KEOO Portland. It's 8 a.m. on Tuesday. It's time for Too Much Information with your hosts, Abe Proctor and Tracy Simmons. Stay tuned.
Good morning. Welcome to Too Much Information on KBOO 90.7 FM in the Portland area. My name's Abe Proctor. I'm joined this morning, as I am each Tuesday morning, by the inestimable Tracy Simmons. Good morning, Tracy.
Good morning, Abe. Good morning, listeners.
So, Tracy, what's new?
Oh, my goodness. If I get another tweet from Donald Trump saying that he won, I'm just going to lose my mind. Like, you didn't win, dude. Just go away. You know, I feel like we have this just, you know, alternate reality that we're all being forced to live through. And we know that there are consequences to continuing aid and abet this very, very delusional person because it's holding up our transition. It's holding up the ability for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris to get the kind of intel that they need. It's holding up the process for them to start developing a strategy to deliver on this vaccine. So we're going to talk about these things today. But, you know, I think we move from what's comical to what becomes scary and frightening. And that's where I'm at. You know, I had like a week to like kind of savor and, okay, we stopped democracy from dying. But, no, it's continuing. It's continuing. How are you feeling, Abe?
Well, I'd say I'm feeling pretty similarly. I'm so weary after all we've lived through, most especially in this past year, but over the last 4 years. And now to watch the president carry on with what's essentially an extended schoolyard tantrum. And having, as a nation, to indulge him in that, despite it not being just merely unseemly, but really deeply disturbing on a pretty profound level. We're talking about somebody who is refusing to acknowledge that anybody would have rejected him in anything approaching a level playing field, and therefore the only way he possibly could have lost is if there was some massive conspiracy against him. And he is pulling on all of those strings, and he is encouraging his followers to act on all of these petty grievances that he's airing right now. And what really frustrates me is that people who should know better, you know, I'm talking about senior Republican leadership. Now, regardless of differences we might have with them ideologically, regardless of the way they may lag behind the IQ curve, generally speaking, that was uncharitable of me, but I'm going to go with it. They're indulging the president. What they're doing is they're trading faith in the continued peaceful transition of power in our democracy, and indeed faith in the stability of our democracy itself, in favor of short-term electoral prospects. And here's what I mean. They're too afraid of the 70 million people who voted for Trump to actually acknowledge the results of an election that just happened in plain sight in front of everybody. They're still not willing to even acknowledge that most basic of facts. In my mind, that invalidates you from public service in a representative democracy. But here in the United States, in the Trump era, we're just going to kind of lumber on. And that's just really, that's disappointing on virtually every level.
Yeah. And I mean, even this, you know, continual dig for, you know, fake ballots or voter, fraud or whatever they're trying to frame it as, you know, all of it, I think Trump is 1 for 24 out of all of the lawsuits he's brought. He has the famous mayor of America, Rudy Giuliani, as the lead of his team of lawyers that's working on this. And of course, they are striking out every turn. And so, yeah, the fact that we have, you know, a high level Republican leadership not, you know, repudiating this behavior really puts a democracy in peril. It's being undermined by the people who literally stand in the space and say that they are patriots. You cannot be a patriot and really be going against the will of the people. A report came out yesterday shared that Lindsey Graham had called the Secretary of State in Georgia and asked for that process of recounting ballots in Georgia, for some of those legally cast ballots to be dumped. And so we have to ask, why is a senator from South Carolina calling to another state and getting involved in that, right? It's not only, kind of twiddling one's thumb while all of this is going on and kind of holding up these shenanigans, but it's also participatory. And so, yeah, that we have to ask, you know, how did this person get reelected, one, with, you know, the level of dissatisfaction from their own, you know, political base that they were trying to rally? And then why are you doing all these other actions outside of your responsibility to try and flip this election for Trump anyway? And it begs the question, what does he have on you? I try and, you know, get away from, like, the homophobic Lady G kind of commentary. But we have to begin asking, what is in it for these people who are supporting the president? What does he have on them to make them literally deny the rights of the voters, the 78 million who voted for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris?
Well, let me take a stab at answering your two questions there. First of all, how did Lindsey Graham get reelected? My answer is racism. Number two, what does Donald Trump have on Lindsey Graham? I really don't want to know, and I don't think we need to know. I just think we need to understand that functionally, there appears to be some sort of leverage being exerted there. But whether there is or there isn't, it seems clear that Lindsey Graham, in attempting to exert back-channel pressure to overturn the results of an election, let's call this what it is, because I think we need to. That's pretty incredible. I'm not an election expert, nor am I a lawyer, but it's hard for me to imagine that that's not a crime on some level or other. And if we lived in a society that valued honor in its leaders And I'm going to hold up the UK as this for example. It's not a very good example, but there's a long tradition. There's a long tradition in the United Kingdom that if you make an egregious mistake, or if you commit a crime, or you do something that's so far out of bounds that it's unacceptable to the public, there's a long history there of people resigning, right, and keeping a modicum of their honor as they go forth in life. We have no such tradition here. Thus, people like Lindsey Graham are allowed to serve more or less in perpetuity because of the racism. But then you have to ask, does this go a little bit further? In attempting to overturn the results of an election in support of the president, of a person that he has a very close relationship, it would appear, is Lindsey Graham participating in a representative democracy, or is he involved in something that perhaps in his mind transcends that? Is he angling for a seat of power in a perpetual Trump dictatorship? What is he doing? I'm just trying to understand. And we may never know the answer to that question, because quite clearly, no matter what Lindsey Graham does or says, he can count on being reelected by a pretty significant margin. So we're really living in a world where there's no accountability for an elected leader for trying to overturn the results of a lawful election. That means that whatever else you want to say about the United States, we are fundamentally broken in that regard. We do not have a system that brings accountability to these people.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. There was also a person at the GSA, the General Services Administration, who is not delivering on the funds for the transition team of Joe Biden, appointed by Trump also. And, you know, we've heard senators in the last week say, oh, well, we're going to go and look into that. Absolutely nothing is being done. This person is still holding up that fund. And for anyone who's ever transitioned out of a job, the whole idea is that you don't burn the place down while the new person's coming in. And I have, you know, transitioned out of many jobs. And the whole intent and purpose of that is to set up a success for whoever is coming behind. And, like, literally this person's responsibility is to transfer funds and to set that up in a semblance of normalcy. But because there is no normalcy and there is no accountability, we're seeing this person who really doesn't have a ton of power outside of what they're doing and the acts that they're, doing right now, use the little bit of power that they have to continually stall and cause more problems for Joe Biden as the new president. And we know that there are consequences as, you know, the pandemic continues to ramp up. We have no national strategy. We basically don't have a president because Trump is golfing, you know, more so than he is doing any governing and tweeting his life away with all of these crazy, you know, I won and, you know, this rampant dominion and all these all caps tweets. And it's like, dude, like, you're not doing anything. You might as well transfer the power over to Joe Biden so he can try and help us all.
Yeah, but see, when your job is the only thing standing between you and prison, you know, perhaps you're a little more reluctant to step down. Tyler wrote into the show to say, Al Franken stepped down, but Lindsey Graham is still in office. So dumb. Yes, Tyler, so dumb.
So dumb.
So very dumb. So we're talking about the Biden transition. It's something I think we're going to need to watch very closely. And as we talked about last week on this program, it is a question around which we as citizens are going to immediately need to begin applying pressure. Here's one of the reasons I say that. I think that temperamentally, Biden is an optimistic guy. I don't think he's big on reprisals or on recriminations or on accountability. I'm worried that under a Biden administration, there's going to be this tendency, much as Obama did when he took office, you know, to not look back to the past, but to look forward, you know, to reach across the divide and make amends and so on. No. There needs to be a full-scale audit of the executive branch of the United States government. We need to overturn every rock. We need to know just how far the rot of the Trump administration and that of previous administrations, let's be very fair, has spread. We need to know all of these things, right? We need to know, after Trump has removed inspectors general from various departments of the executive branch, we need to know what's happened in those departments since oversight was removed. On the foreign stage, we need to know just how corrupt things got, how much information did people like Rudy Giuliani give away in their attempt to secure an electoral advantage for their boss? These are all things that we need to know. And I hope that in the future, in the immediate future in the Biden administration, we're going to see a whole lot of investigations followed by charges being brought, followed by trials, and hopefully by imprisonments, because it needs to be known far and wide that this sort of thing is no longer going to be tolerable. We need to see heads on spikes, Tracy. That's what I'm saying.
I agree. I am cautiously optimistic about that. I don't think that's going to happen. But I do think that certain people should not be allowed to be comfortable in public space. Right. And I'm thinking about you know, the press secretaries of the Trump administration. I'm, of course, thinking about Rudy Giuliani. I'm thinking about eventually, hopefully, Mitch McConnell, Lindsey Graham, the sycophants, you know, Kevin McCarthy, others who literally have blocked so much progress. We know that, you know, McConnell has 400 or so different bills on his desk, in his graveyard, as he calls it. We should be angry. And yes, there absolutely should be investigations of this Trump administration. We know that there are things that we will not know about until there is an investigation. And that's frightening to just think of the kinds of things that are being hidden from public view at this moment. We know that, you know, Trump just installed his own lackeys in the Pentagon for who knows what reason. I think there was speculation that there was going to be some kind of auto coup that did not materialize, because there's no way to turn back the results of this election, how hard, you know, Rudy Giuliani and his team are trying. But yes, we have to ask, you know, and where are the paper shredders? What's being shredded? What's being held from... and even to think about the kind of exposure Trump has right now because of his debts coming due, what kind of American secrets would he sell? What would he do to protect himself? And, you know, I think the American tradition is that, you know, new presidents don't go investigating their, you know, their adversaries. That's something that happens in banana republics. I think this is a different kind of situation and a different kind of administration who has done some really terrible things in plain sight, whether that's, you know, capturing people's children and locking them up, whether that's, you know, all of the foreign intrigue with, you know, bribing the Ukraine and all of the interesting intrigue with Russia. We know that, you know, there are some bodies, they are buried. We need to figure out where they are. And do that work. But I just worry that because Joe Biden is really focused on the future and focused on healing and reconciliation, which we have talked about, I don't know that there will be an emphatic attempt to figure out all the things we don't know. So I guess it'll probably be a trickle in the next 10 years, maybe 20.
Yeah, agreed. You're probably right. That's going to be far less satisfying than it might be otherwise. However, there are situations brewing, for example, like the reportedly quite large and convincing case that the Southern District of New York is building against Trump, and also which the Attorney General of the state of New York is building against Trump. Whether or not a Joe Biden Justice Department would put the kibosh on that Southern District of New York investigation remains to be seen. But at the state level, I don't know that there's much that a new president could do or would really want to do. I think maybe that might be the ideal situation for an incoming president. Well, you know, I'm going to wash my hands of this, but I'm going to let the attack dogs in the state of New York's justice system go after this guy. And that might bring a rather satisfying resolution to all of us. And if it sounds like I'm being petty, it's because I am. I want him to go to jail. I want him to go to jail. Now, however unseemly that might be, that's still what I want in my little heart of hearts, Tracy.
I am not a religious person, but I absolutely believe that it doesn't feel fair in life that some people do so many terrible things and are never held to account, right? I would love to believe that karma exists. I would love to believe that, you know, there is a place where the bad people go. I don't, frankly, believe any of that. But I think in times like this, I lean into those kind of like, oh, my goodness, that would be great if there was really karma. Because what I know and what I've seen is that some of the worst people on Earth live the longest, they do the most harm to the most amount of people, and those of us who kind of walk in the world and try and be good and do good things oftentimes are not rewarded in any way for doing that and being that. Except that we can sit back and say that, hey, I tried, right? And so, yeah, it seems fundamentally unfair. And, I've seen, Mitch McConnell's hands, we've made the jokes, I think there's something in there that is dying to crawl out. So that's all I can hope for, right? That, it's either a physical impairment, a slow, painful demise, whatever it is. I try not to wish bad things on people, but in this case, I feel like I don't have any choice, right? Like, there has to be some level of reckoning for these people who have done such terrible things to our democracy.
I think what we're seeing with McConnell is the grim result of a pact he made with dark forces. He has to, drink the blood of innocent children every night or something to keep himself alive. I really don't know. I can't find any other. Well, there's the racism. Yes, there's one explanation. But other than that, for McConnell, I'm at a loss. Mark writes to the show to say he is seriously looking, he being Trump, is seriously looking at a war with Iran as a lame duck. And would he, if he starts a war, declare martial law and nullify the transition? I'd like to say that such a thing is completely out of bounds, Mark, but I really can't say that. I think that scenario is unlikely. I'm not willing to rule it out sitting right here this morning. Definitely not.
Yeah. And what's interesting, the lackeys that he has installed at the Pentagon are not people that create and make commands. So they're not commanding officer type roles. They are leadership roles that have more to do with foreign affairs and the information that we would need to be able to investigate. And so that's what's scary, right? That they have their hands on the levers of a different kind of power, a power of intelligence and knowledge. And so that's also scary. But yeah, I don't see, the all of these doomsday scenarios where Trump usurps power and declares a coup because of some other instance of criminality that he's doing. I don't see that happening. But I also think, I put nothing past this person. And, I am a historian, not by trade, but by pleasure. And, took some time to think about Adolf Hitler. I know people hate the kind of thinking about these two people. But what I do know is in the kind of last days of Hitler, before he took his own life, he was in a delusional state as well, claiming that Germany was going to win. And then when he realized that Germany was not at all possible to win the war, he instructed the people who followed him to go ahead and start burning all of Germany. And I do think that, I don't put anything past Trump, because I think he lives in the same space of narcissistic pathology and delusion. And it's like, if I don't want it all, let's burn it all down. And I do think that is, part and parcel of why there is no national response, why he's not doing anything, even as a lame duck, to try and stop this pandemic. His, the person that he has now in charge of that pandemic team, of course, not talking about Mike Pence, who has absolutely done nothing either, but, Scott Atlas got on TV and told people to go ahead and celebrate Thanksgiving with your family. It might be your last one. What kind of quackery is that? How would you possibly think that you could hold your job and be giving such terrible advice to people, advice that will literally take people's lives, right? So you might have a nice Thanksgiving with all of your family, but guess what you'll be celebrating on Christmas, right? A celebration of somebody's life who's no longer with you. Please don't do it. But yes, we literally have installed people who are the antithesis of healing hope, moving the country past this pandemic. It feels like a burn it all down kind of situation.
Yeah, I know what you mean when you say we installed them, but in a sense, we really didn't, right? There's so many Trump appointees that were never vetted or confirmed by the Senate. They're occupying their posts in an interim capacity. And really, as we mentioned earlier, without any significant oversight, I think what we're going to discover as we dig into this over the next few years is the level of sheer graft it's going to floor us all. I mean, when we find out how much money has been walked away with by unconfirmed members of the Trump administration, how many perks that they've enjoyed, it's going to be absolutely staggering. And of course, as you're mentioning, the real downside to having unqualified, unvetted people in positions of high responsibility is that you have somebody like Mr. Atlas, and one of the most ironic names I think we've ever seen in American government, advising people to actually go to grandma's for Thanksgiving. Tens of thousands of people are going to die because Mr. Atlas is saying these things.
Yeah.
They're going to die. And this is, you know, after a result in which the incumbent president was clearly defeated during this delicate transitional period at a time when new coronavirus cases have reached an all-time high. I mean, just the sheer scope of this irresponsibility, this malfeasance. There's more people than the president who need to go to jail, Tracy.
Yeah, the William Barrs of the world, the Scott Atlas of the world, these people should not be able to show their face in public after all is said and done. And, you know, it's scary because, of course, we have these two realities. We have, kind of these very radicalized right-wing folks that will listen to that and do it. And guess what? They're at most risk as well, right? And so it feels terrible. Of course, he's a radiologist doing the job of a public health expert, so not qualified in any way to do that. And ultimately, what we'll see is a continued death spiral, and we have two other holidays coming up, right? So we have Christmas and then we have New Year's. I have lost friends over the pandemic because some of the people that I've seen, you know, acting very irresponsibly, I just can't have around me. I have a daughter who is immune compromised, and I have an older mother who, you know, is healthy, but she is an older Black woman who is in that demographic of people who might potentially die of the coronavirus. And so, you know, I've tried to create this buffer around me for people who are acting irresponsibly, but you know, it's kind of a group project. Lavi Ajayi is a commentator and just an amazing woman. And basically said, this is a group project. The only reason I hate group projects is because there's always people who don't do their work, right? And right. The work of all of us is to mask up, right? Let's stay in our little pods of our families and Zoom in for Thanksgiving, Zoom in for Christmas, send your packages in the mail. Thanks USPS. And UPS, let's support these businesses by sending those packages. But no, you know, I just feel like at this point, the lack of a response to the pandemic feels like the new genocide. And I know that is hard for people to hear, but at this point, we're you know, approaching 250,000 dead Americans. You know, at this point, hundreds and thousands of 9/11s on our hands, and nothing still is being done about it. And we know that there's a disparity of who is getting sick, who is dying of it. We know that it's skewing towards older folks. We know it's skewing towards communities of color. And the lack of a response now, to me, feels like a genocide project, negative eugenics, however you want to frame it. But like these people just, you know, oh well, they're just not going to be here next year. So it's your last Thanksgiving. Have at it, folks. It's very disturbing.
They're old anyway. Have a good time. Have another couple of your mashed potatoes. Yeah, it's so dark. It's something you really don't want to think about too deeply for too long because it's so stomach turning. And really, I mean, I said this on the show in the past. I mean, there's those of us, for example, I'm a member of Generation X. I feel like I've been training my whole life for this pandemic. All we're being asked is to stay home and play video games and binge watch Netflix, right? And maybe strap a little cloth over your face when you wander out in public. I mean, it's not, there's a new advertisement out that was made by the German government. It's out there on the internet, I'm sure you can find it. And it involves an elderly man, and it's sort of like a documentary setting, and he's talking to an interviewer, and he's recalling the struggle against the coronavirus, you know, how everybody had a big beep. And then it flashes back to him as a younger man, and he's sprawled on his couch with the TV on, you know. And then later he's laying the other way, and there's some drool coming out of his mouth, you know. He's like, so we stayed home and we did nothing. And, you know, that's really what we're talking about. And of course, everybody, we all want to go out to the movies. We want to go down for happy hour and meet your neighbors for a pint. We want to go to Thanksgiving with our family. We all want this, right? But this is years from now. I guarantee you, you're going to feel so much better knowing you didn't do these things. You're going to look back saying, this is the year without Thanksgiving. You know, this is the year without Christmas or Hanukkah with the family. But you know what? You're going to be glad you did it on the far side of this. And I just feel like we're all so collectively juvenile that we haven't even been able to rally ourselves for this relatively small burden that we're being asked to shoulder in the name of public health. And it's just got me feeling pretty cynical about people. I really hope that we can see our way forward to acting more responsible on a collective level.
Well, I just think towards the future, too, and thinking about Joe Biden as the new president, you know, what is that transition going to look like? You know, how are we going to get this vaccine distributed? And we now know we have two different vaccines. And I know, yep. Abe, you've done some looking into that. And so would love to hear, you know, what you found out about the new vaccine. But I think, you know, we... Even thinking about Joe Biden coming in and having a philosophical shift around, you know, imploring the states to shut down at least for 2 or 3 weeks, talking about paying people, some of these other strategies, I think there will be, because Trump has done nothing, a rejection of even that. And so we're just, you know, in this space of you know, no leadership, lame duck. It gives me a lot of concern that it is on me, it is on my neighbors, it's on us to do the right thing. And so there is an imperative for us to really take that mantle and do the right thing. You know, I know here in Portland there is an underground party scene that, you know, I'm a millennial, and I'm just looking at my friends like, y'all are out of your minds, right? If grandma doesn't survive in this next few months, it's on you. I'm giving them all the side eye, but I think, you know, we have to look towards the future, and I think there's hope. We've seen an uptick and you know, kind of maximizing at the Wall Street with kind of, you know, future hopes on this pandemic ending through these vaccines. But what did you find out, Abe, about the vaccine?
Well, let's talk about the vaccines. Before we do, though, I want to mention you're listening to Too Much Information on KBOO 90.7 FM. We would love to hear your thoughts on this unique moment in time. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. You can also write to us on the Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Tracy. Kara writes in to say, as a woman, I want to say that and I am thoroughly enjoying Tracy's perspective on politics. I especially appreciate her perspective on what we can and should actually expect in the next 4 years. Thank you, Tracy.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, I enjoyed your addition to the show as well, Tracy. I think I made a rather excellent choice. But
thanks,
I digress. Let's take a call, and then we'll dig into the vaccines. Let's go to Corey. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Just want to say something. I find it interesting that lately Trump has been really going hardcore at attacking Fox News. And as far as I'm concerned, Fox News is propaganda. I don't care if they have Neil Cavuto on there for 1 hour or maybe two or three smatterings of people telling the truth. Like, you know, Neil Cavuto is like, yeah, but didn't they have 23 hours of lies? Someone
asked about 10 Neil Cavutos to start.
Exactly. And people are like, well, where do you get your information from? I listen to KBOO or Pacifica in Houston or CBC. I listen to other places. Well, what about MSNBC, their propaganda? I'm sorry, Dr. Rachel Maddow doesn't lie at the level of Tucker Carlson, who lied about a person voting. And she was like, no, I'm alive. Here I am. You know, it's you know, if Rachel Maddow makes a mistake, she'll retract it immediately. So, but I do find it interesting, these two networks that Trump has been pumping up, Newsmax and OAN. If you just watch them briefly, it's just a stream of lies, and it's really like who is attracted to this? Like, what type of psychology do you have to where you're just being lied to? I understand confirmation bias, but were you being, these are just bald-faced lies. I also noticed last night that Sarah Palin turned up, and she's upset that President Obama wrote a book referring to her as anti-intellectual. The audacity to call Sarah Palin anti-intellectual, she's upset about that. Once again, if someone's speaking the truth, just accept it. Just, I don't know why you got to get so upset about, you know, President Obama writing a book saying that you were anti-intellectual. So, but I do find it interesting, though, this whole News Corp. There seems to be some power behind it. I've seen Malcolm Turnbull recently going hard at News Corp as well, because they lie about climate change and they lie repeatedly. So I don't know if there's going to be some sort of, you know, more you know, power behind this sort of News Corp disinformation machine. But I think a lot of more people are paying attention right now because, the fact that you have an entire organization that lies, and I think also they just got sick of Trump. I think that even they are like, okay, enough's enough. This has been fun. Let's sort of move on to another clown at this point.
Do you think, Corey, what we're looking at is a situation where the ecosystem of alternative facts and the universe that is built with those facts, the one that was created by News Corp, was so spectacularly successful now that when the facts of the empirical world clash with them the way they are now, that this bubble, it's been so incredibly successful now that it's driving people away. It's driving them into the arms of Newsmax and OANN, which are the only remaining little pocket universes that align now with what these people have come to believe after so many years of disinformation. Maybe that's
exactly what and the Alex Joneses, because he's out there as well. Yeah. And I forget the guy in Florida, whatever his name is, the I don't care, but yeah, I think even with these people, like, there's a Roger Stone, there's like enough. So, you know, and now Fox News, I'm still concerned. Fox News is still not a legitimate news operation as far as I'm concerned. The fact that they're now being sort of thrown under the bus, I find to be sort of interesting. But I'll leave it at that, and thank you guys. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Corey. Appreciate the call. Olivia writes into the show to say, I think we should bring up the fact that Trump has now started golfing pretty much every day on the taxpayers' dime. Even though he has wasted money in the past, he is literally spending thousands upon thousands every day just to fill his pockets before he leaves and hopefully goes to jail. Among the many areas in which we need to exact accountability from this administration is the fact that the Trump administration has cost us so very much money. Every time he goes to Mar-a-Lago, we pay for it. Every time he goes golfing, we pay for it. And frankly, I would like to see someone present him with a bill.
Yeah, it goes straight to his pocket because he's golfing at his own golf courses. So it's okay. You know, he's funding himself.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about...
I did want to just address some of Corey's points.
Sure.
That, you know, I think there's kind of rumbling out in the world that Trump is going to come back and create Trump TV, right? And he's mm-hmm. Setting himself up to do this through, taking on Newsmax or OAN. We also know that there's Parler right now, which is a Twitter-like kind of platform for... the QAnons and the far right Republicans. So I just think in absence of being held to account for the conspiracy theories and the nonsense that, you know, is going out into the world, there's even a digging in that we're seeing in these different networks to continue the grift, right? It's all about making money off of people who are not savvy enough with their ability to discern what is true and what's false, and then there's also the confirmation bias. And so what we'll see is a proliferation of these kinds of right-wing, kind of populist but deeply, you know, entrenched, terrible beliefs happening. And what's interesting about, like, Parler is that right now we know the FBI is kind of scanning that platform for the white supremacist domestic terrorists and other do bads in our society. And so we'll see I'm guessing from these investigations, we'll see people with interesting plots, not dissimilar from trying to capture the governor of Michigan, plots to overthrow different state houses. We'll see that. And so it's kind of good that we can kind of relegate these people to a small area and watch what they're doing.
Yeah, that's so true. But let's talk a little bit about the vaccines that are suddenly appeared on the horizon, and then we'll take some more calls after that. As you probably heard last week, the pharmaceutical company Pfizer announced that it had developed a vaccine that was appeared to be very promising in early trials, posting a success rate of just above 90%, which in and of itself far exceeded what most people were hoping for. And then earlier this week, just yesterday, as a matter of fact, another pharmaceutical company, Moderna, reported that it had also developed a vaccine that looked very promising in early trials, showing a success rate of almost 95%. So both of these results, should they pan out and stand up in wider scale testing, appear to be very, very promising for controlling the immediate community spread of the virus, which we need to acknowledge in the United States now is spreading uncontrolled. So this is good. This is really good news. There's some small differences in the way these things are developed and in the way they're going to have to be distributed. For example, the Pfizer vaccine needs to be refrigerated at temperatures at least 40 degrees below zero Celsius, which is really, really cold. I don't know really anything to compare it with, because we generally don't meet things in our everyday life that are that cold. However, the Moderna vaccine, that can be stored at temperatures of only about minus 20 degrees Celsius, which is about what you would experience in a typical home freezing compartment. So if you want to gauge it in that respect, if you're familiar with what the inside of your freezer feels like, that's what the Moderna vaccine is going to need. Much, much colder for the Pfizer vaccine. So that's going to pose some logistical challenges in and of itself. There's the program that was launched by President Trump, Operation Warp Speed, which I think came into for some, let's be honest, unfair criticism from the left, because frankly, it's kind of what we wanted to be doing in this situation, offering a bunch of government money, not only to jumpstart the research and development process, but to be a guaranteed buyer once the vaccine was developed. These things are important and necessary. So the Pfizer vaccine was developed without any money from Operation Warp Speed. All of its R&D was financed internally. The government did, however, come in and pledge to be a buyer of a certain number of doses as an incentive for Pfizer to continue its research, which should be noted that this practice has precedent. It is many times in the past, the government has said to the developer of a vaccine or a different kind of therapy that, yes, we will be here as a buyer for you when your product is ready. Note that. So the Pfizer project, Pfizer vaccine, did use Operation Warp Speed money. The Moderna vaccine did not, but both were guaranteed that a certain number of their doses would be purchased once they are ready for distribution. So this is really, really good news. This represents an opportunity to at least get the community spread of the virus halted, to confine it, and hopefully with a robust system of testing and contact tracing, isolate any future flare-ups that may develop. This is a very, very important first step. In combination, we have to emphasize, in combination with the mitigation steps that we're already taking, social distancing, hand washing, mask wearing, all of this stuff needs to continue even after we do get a vaccine, which is going to be this coming spring at the earliest. So a very, very positive development on the vaccine front, and I think we should all be hopeful about it. At least I am.
Yeah, I'm hopeful, and I will take the vaccine. I've heard from, you know, very interesting people who will say, you know, vaccines cause, you know, autism, and, you know, we have an anti-vaxxer element in our country. And I'm also intrigued by how we're going to distribute the vaccine. Are we going to focus on the most kind of vulnerable populations? How is that going to happen? Because I think what people's expectation is that it will be kind of the elites, people who have money, who have proximity to power, who will get it first, as opposed to elderly folks in community homes. you know, other people in you know, Native communities, Indigenous communities, whatnot. So I'm fascinated. I'm hopeful. I will take the vaccine when it becomes available to me. But I also am very interested in how this will all happen and play out.
You're right. There's absolutely an equity angle to how this is going to unfold. From what I've read so far, an optimal distribution situation would involve giving it first to frontline healthcare workers who are continually working with infected folks. That makes sense. Secondly, to members of the most vulnerable populations, the elderly, communities of color, people with pre-existing conditions. And then after those folks are inoculated, only then to the general, more healthy bulk of the population. Ideally, that's what we'd have. But of course, we're talking about the Trump administration, which means there is no plan to do any of this. So we're really going to have to hope that the Biden administration can get a competent team of people together quickly and decide how this is all going to be rolled out. I would be more confident for that to happen, Tracy, if the Trump administration were allowing the transition process to begin as prescribed under law, but we're not. So this is yet another example of how the rank incompetence of this man and his thin-skinned narcissism, his overweening arrogance, are going to result in more people dying than is necessary. So let's go back to the phones. James, good morning.
Good morning. You know, I think the biggest thing that most people don't really concern when it comes to the political situation that we're in is that this has been like what we're seeing with Trump is that it's 40 years in the making. I mean, if you really start with Reagan, with the whole deregulation of corporations, and then on through up to the Clinton administration with the gutting of Glass-Steagall and you know, the passing of NAFTA, you have a whole set of people who for 40 years, whether it's been Republicans or Democrats, have literally been screwed by the government. And so I think that a lot of the things we're talking about right now are these quick fixes, but I don't hear people talk. I mean, I know that Trump is horrible, but he's an accelerant on a fire that's been burning for a long time. And I think that if we just try to take the accelerant out of the fire without addressing the fire itself, all it's going to take is another person to come into place if it happened again. And I'm just really disappointed that, I mean, it's really just boiled down to this kind of empty notion of bipartisanship, and especially when it, you know, Biden's ideas for the administration. I mean, what his ideas would have been great in like 1992. I mean, he's really, I mean, I just feel like he's real. I mean, he's better. I mean, I guess he's slightly more compassionate than Trump, but a lot of his ideas are very dated, you know, especially in terms of like how he wants to approach climate change. I mean, I feel like there really has to be this reckoning in terms that, you know, it's a, this whole fetishization of bipartisanship by Democrats and this kind of like over this desire for overreaching power on the end of the Republicans. And so it feels like nothing has, I mean, if anything, it's just people have been hurt more. I mean, I don't know. It's like, I want to have some sort of hope in this new administration, but I mean, even if you discount the transition team, I mean, if you just look at the sheer rhetoric that Biden ran on, I mean, it wasn't that inspiring and really just kind of hurt the down ballot ticket that everybody's been talking about. You know, even though people voted for Biden, there was a lot of split ticket. So I'm just, I don't know. I mean, I just wish people understood it. I mean, like Corey was talking about how, it's not just Fox News that's the problem. It's MSNBC. You know, it's this whole idea that we're literally just a set of people who have binary opposing beliefs. You know, like, I mean, when you look at the Fox exit polls and how many people actually are interested in Medicare for All, you know, that's something that's supposed to be this left-wing, ultra-progressive sort of belief, but when you realize that people on the right want it, it's like we're not even speaking the same language, you know. And then with the exit polls, now we have Democrats in high places attacking progressives and quote-unquote socialists and the quote-unquote woke brigade for causing the razor-thin margin wins and their losses. Mm-hmm. It's like there's just this inability to speak to the fact that, you know, people are hurting and they're not really necessarily caring about bipartisan politics.
I'm going to stop you there. I think because we want to give some others a chance before the end of the show. But I think your points are definitely worth addressing. I would encourage you to reserve judgment until you actually see who President Biden is going to appoint in key positions, and until you see him actually begin to grapple with some of these questions you're talking about. As to the fact that Biden was a less than inspiring candidate, I think you're absolutely correct. But he is the candidate who came out on top of the Democratic primary nomination process. He is the nominee of the party. He is ultimately the guy who contested the election against the incumbent president. As Tracy and I both mentioned, he was far from our first choice, but he's the guy we got. And this brings us back around to the ethos that we're going to try to advance on this show, which is that we as citizens cannot adopt a static and passive role in what transpires in the next years. We must absolutely be engaged, active agents in how our democracy evolves, and I use that word intentionally, evolves in the next, in the foreseeable future. That's what we have to do. We have to apply pressure. We have to make sure he does the right thing. We cannot accept the same old stead excuses, the same old deference to moneyed interests. We are simply out of time. And I think we have reason to believe that President Biden might act in the country's best interest. Remain to be seen.
Yeah, and I don't think Biden could have run on anything but bipartisanship, because he could be the anti-Trump, but doing the same thing as Trump, right? Only focused on you know, kind of the left wing of this country. And I don't think that would have been a unifying message, which I think most people felt relieved to hear a unifying message after having 4 years of a very divisive figurehead at kind of the lead role in the government. I also agree that, you know, we're not going to solve all the problems of the world by getting rid of Trump, but I think Trump as a human has this, you know, incredible way in which he corrupts other people. That is very different from other Republicans we've seen in the past. I think one thing we need to do is really state and in every way unequivocal show the patterns, right? When Republicans are in charge, they end up screwing us all over. We end up in, you know, the Enron situations of the world, you know, huge debt. And then guess what? Democrats get elected, clean it all up, and then Republicans take it back and do it all over again. How do we express to voters that that is the pattern that we've seen for the last 40 years, and encourage them to stop voting against their own interests?
Yeah, exactly. I think there's no question that President Biden is an imperfect vessel for the times. I'm just mixing my metaphors there, but I think you understand what I mean. He's not the optimal guy in the job at this moment in time. Absolutely true. But what's equally true is we have a global pandemic happening right now. We have a global environmental catastrophe happening right now. We have a racial justice movement happening right now. So whether or not the messenger is the right one, these are problems we have to grapple with right now. And what I'm saying, and what this show is going to say, is that this effort requires the engagement of all of us. We all need to write. We all need to phone. We all need to get our asses out of our chairs and our bodies into the streets when the moment calls for it. All hands on deck is what we're saying.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Who's next? George.
Hey, good morning, Abe. A few years ago, there was a swine flu epidemic, and there was a swine flu vaccine was developed. And I'm not sure whether there was an independent organization watching things, but before people realized it, I was just talking to a friend, and she said, well, there were some people who got paralyzed and died from that swine flu vaccine, and we have Pfizer and the other firm you mentioned. They're supervising the reporting on the trials of their vaccine. And is there any chance, I mean, have you heard anything about people getting sick from this? I mean, could it be a cover-up, or is it, are we getting, would you say, pretty honest reporting on these vaccines?
Well, I mean, that's hard to say, because both companies that have developed a working vaccine, Pfizer and Moderna, both of them have released limited data from their preliminary phase of trials. So we don't know a whole lot. What we do know, for example, with Moderna, I'm going to use Moderna as an example. They had a control group. Some of them got the vaccine, others received a placebo, and during the course of the experiment, a number of them contracted COVID-19. Some of them became severely ill. Of those who became severely ill, none had received the vaccine. Of those who received the vaccine, a much, much smaller proportion became ill, and none of those displayed severe symptoms that required hospitalization.
Oh, well, this is reassuring, but the reporting is from the vaccine maker, but that's what we got, I guess.
That's what we got, yes. So obviously, we have a ways to go yet. We have to conduct trials at a much larger scale. We have to see these results duplicated by others in double-blind trials. You know, that's how the scientific method, how the scientific process works. Somebody's experimental findings have to be verified independently by somebody else in a similar setting. So
that sounds right.
We have a ways to go.
All we can say right now is
initial indications are positive.
Thank you for reassuring me that there are going to be some more trials, and I want to thank you. I'll get off the phone, and more people need to contribute. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go to Dennis. Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call. This is on a completely different subject. Actually, well, it's related. It's political. But what I heard last night was that there was you know, Georgia has had a recount, you know, I think you know that. But then I heard that other states are having recounts too. There are at least five other states, and that's kind of a nightmare scenario, because we've got an election coming up, and how are these states gonna do their recounts before the inauguration? I'm sorry, inauguration. I meant. Have you heard anything about that?
Well, yeah, they're going to have to be ready sooner than that. The precise date escapes me, but sometime in December is the date when the various state legislatures have to certify their slate of electors and forward those results on to the House of Representatives for official tabulation. So the timeline is a little tighter than you're saying. The good news is that in all the places where these recounts are taking place, the apparent margin of victory is such that it's very unlikely that the recounts are going to overturn anything.
Yeah,
usually recounts... Go ahead.
Oh, the only place that's having an actual recount is Georgia. You know, Wisconsin recount would cost Trump $7.9 million. We know he's broke. The margin of victory in Michigan and in Pennsylvania is way too big to recount. It would not net him enough votes to even change the outcome. Recounts right now being proposed in Nevada or Arizona. So I don't know where you heard that, but the only place an actual recount is happening currently is in Georgia. And I said earlier, you know, Trump's legal team on these recounts is 1 for 24. And so they keep striking out. And I don't expect that that's going to change.
Wait a minute. I just wanted to say that I saw on the web five states, including New Hampshire, and I forget the others, but they were I wasn't believing it that these states were having recounts. I just couldn't believe it. But I wondered if you'd heard anything about that.
I have not.
No,
I haven't heard anything. Anyway, we're getting near the end here, Dennis, so I think we're going to let you go. I appreciate your comments, as always. Roger writes in to say, I think, Abe, you misspoke. Pfizer did not receive any Operation Warp Speed funding, but the U.S. government agreed to purchase the first 100 million doses. That is what I said. Pfizer received no Operation Warp Speed funding, but Moderna received Operation Warp Speed funding. And yes, in both cases, the government agreed to purchase the first X million doses that were ready for distribution as an incentive. So, is there anything you'd like to add before we sign off, Tracy?
You know, no, we'll have a show before Thanksgiving. I will just encourage people, if you are planning to do a large Thanksgiving, that you reconsider. There are lots of platforms like Zoom and Google Meet that you could do it virtually. And I'm just encouraging and imploring people to consider, you know, how they can, you know, connect with people, connect with family, maintain those relationships in a virtual environment this year for the safety of us all.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's not the same. Of course, it's not the same. This is not how we are wired, human beings. We're not supposed to spend festive periods apart from the people we love. But listen, skip Thanksgiving this year so that you can enjoy many more Thanksgivings to come. I think that's really what it boils down to. So I guess that brings us to an end of another show. This has been Too Much Information with Abe and Tracy on KDOO 90.7 FM. Appreciate everybody's contributions, and we'll be back at you next week. Over me.
Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public